good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the world today. Thanks for hopping on and joining us this afternoon slash this evening. It's going to be pretty low key today, just like what we did on Tuesday night. I will provide the recording for y'all Tuesday night for those who are not able to join us, because we had a lot of fun, a lot of questions, and you'll get a chance to access all of those as well. I did get an email from someone who was unable to join us, so I wanted to just knock those questions off first. You might find them useful, and then I'll set the table, and I'll just open it up, and you can ask me about this. You can ask me about anything. Anything I can do to be helpful today will be the way that we go. Let's see here. So the three emails that were sent, three questions that were sent in ahead of time. The first question she asked is, I'm having a bit of trouble calibrating my wrist. Does it matter if your elbow is bent or if your arm is straight? Personally, I find having my arm straight easier to do. And for me, straight and then also like hanging down to my side, like I can do it here and I will do it that way. And if I'm sitting down, I might have my arm bent and doing it. But when I'm starting out, the less tension that I have in my arm, the easier it is for the entire arm to be relaxed. So when starting, I typically have my arm draped and I do it at the side. And you can't see that on the camera, but it's hanging down. But that's typically what I do, and I find it a little easier to calibrate that way. The second question was, we know that tapping, it's best to be as detailed as possible. So how precise or general do you recommend being when testing for a substance sensitivity? Is it okay to check for dairy and tap for dairy, or do we need to go milk, butter, cheese, yogurt, sour cream separately? For me, I'm always going to start with the specific that I have. And sometimes when we're tapping on something, the specific I have is I feel like crap. And that is the only specific I have in this moment. And I can't even give vocabulary or name the specific emotion I'm tapping on. So I start there. The exact same thing with muscle testing is I do it as specific as possible. We know typically if you have a dairy sensitivity, you have a dairy sensitivity, and it's rarely something that is narrower, but sometimes that's the case. So basically what I do is I start as narrow that feels specific enough. Like dairy is way more specific than food. So that is a good place to start. And then narrowing it down from there to see if that is something that is useful. So that is a really incomplete answer. It's like, it kind of depends, but that's the way I think about it. And as always, the most important question is, how's it working for you? As you step into it and you play around with it, if it works one way, keep doing it. If not, try more specific. Like, in general, I'm going to be as specific as I can, except like when I'm putting together my to-do list and I need to send an email, I don't put open web browser, go to Gmail, click compose, like that. I don't need to put all of that on my to-do list. And so inside of that, you know, start generally, and let's say we do it where something where we get a hit on dairy, then try two or three things inside of that. And as you try two or three things, if you find that they're consistent each time, then you just say, dairy, that's enough. And if you find, well, maybe it's this and maybe it's not that, then that is a useful thing to look at. The third question she asked was, when we're tapping for a substance sensitivity, is that something that you abstain from or do you keep consuming the thing? It depends. There are things that I know, like if I eat something that is super, super spicy late in the evening, I know there is going to be a consequence for my sleep by eating spicy food very, very late in the evening, which will probably turn into wacky dreams and all of that sort of craziness, and I won't sleep as well. And I know that. And there are occasions in which I will exchange having a rough night's sleep for some really good spicy food before I go to bed. Other times, it is something that is so, the symptoms are so distasteful that I don't want to do them at all. And so for me, it's an issue of whether, when I'm tapping for something, whether or not I'm still engaging with that particular thing, it really depends on the consequence of me not abstaining from that thing, as I'm still having things go wrong. Like, there are people in my life who cause me some internal conflict engaging with them. And there are some people in my life who that conflict is so great, I completely avoid those people. And some people I'm willing to grit my teeth and kind of work my way through it because of the value of doing that thing. And so it's taking responsibility for myself. And as I step into it, how much of the distress do I want to endure when I'm doing something? And that will determine whether or not I'm engaging with it. So those are the three questions I got ahead of time. So if you have questions about anything that we talked about last week with muscle testing, with trying it out, with anything that I just shared, I got it set up so you can unmute yourself. I will see you unmute yourself and I'll call on you so we're not talking over each other. But what are the questions or experiences or things that you learned and tried as you played around with the stuff that I taught last week? Yeah, Chris, go ahead.
Yeah, Gina, it's a very basic one, maybe a good starter, is that, yeah. You know, when you were describing how when you had a bad cold, I think, and then you sort of, you know, blew your nose and put yourself in a tissue, and then you had tapped with that.
Yeah.
What actually is the tapping doing in that process?
Yeah. So, okay. Don't know. This is the hypothesis of what is going on, is that whatever is in that Kleenex, the viruses, the bacteria, the funguses, whatever it is, I'm drawing my attention to them in my energetic field because it is in front of me. And so the exact same way I might like think about like what color would I paint the pain in my knee if I was painting a picture of it, it's a tool to focus in on what is going on. And so I'm drawing my attention specifically to the thing. Mm-hmm. So my system on some level is aware of what is in front of me. And so if we believe that tuning in any degree is something that is useful, then some benefit comes from that. The other thing is, and this is kind of one of those wacky things that when we're dealing with like what we know and collective consciousness and that sort of stuff, like whenever I'm working with a family that has a child who's been diagnosed somewhere on the autism spectrum, and we're going through the 50 most common sensitivities, there's a number of chemicals on there that I have no idea what they are. Like I just see the name and I'm muscle testing for this name. And because kids who are on the spectrum very often are tested for substance sensitivities because they recognize how valuable that is my muscle testing has been consistent with the diagnosis that an allergist has given the family. And so at that point, my only guess is, okay, somewhere in this collective consciousness and the information that we share, I am able to access whatever this petroleum product is, and I'm able to see whether or not it's engaging with the person who is there. So that is the best that I can come up with as a hypothesis. And as always, I'm prefacing with all of this that this just sounds like woo-woo crap. And it could be at the exact same time. And it's, you know, again, like the worst thing that is coming from all of this is like, as I'm focusing on the thing that is in my hand, I'm also internally focusing on, okay, I believe that there's something in my hand that is a virus, a bacteria, a fungus, or something that is in my body that is unhealthy. And so maybe it's not because it's in my hand, but I'm going, oh, this is stuff that came out of my body that is causing my body havoc. Therefore, I'm tuning into that particular thing. And so then it could just be an internal thing. And this is an arrow that is pointing at what is going on inside of my body instead of it actually being in the Kleenex when I am tapping on it. And so the mechanism I'm unsure of, but I think both of those are reasonable possibilities.
But in the way, in that good example, what the tapping is doing, rather akin to when in standard EFT, when we're neutralizing a bad memory,
right,
and you know the studs are coming down, all that. What you're doing here then is you're tapping on a negative substance which you're holding in your hand, and what you're doing is in fact clearing that from your body. That's what the tapping is. That what you're looking to do with the tapping?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and you know, so the goal is always to have a proportionate, well-informed response to whatever is going on. And so if there is an invader in my body that is not useful for my health, the appropriate, well-informed response is my immune system is able to take care of this particular thing. And for whatever reason, at the moment, my immune system is not taking care of the particular thing. And so this is a way of fine-tuning the system to see if it can take care of that thing.
Got you. Thanks.
And again, like that is like what I would consider a coherent explanation that is reasonable and rational. And that does, like, there are lots of coherent explanations for the way lots of things are in the world, and they're not the right answer. They just happen to be a coherent explanation of that particular thing. So that's, you know, that's the operating principle. And I find it useful regardless if I understand what the operating principle is. You know, like I have my cell phone, and I could think the reason why my cell phone works is they're little bitty angels carrying my voice from one phone to another. And it doesn't matter if it is CDMA technology or tiny little angels, I can talk to my mother on my cell phone, and that is something that works for me. If I push the buttons, she picks up on the other side, we get to have a conversation 1,700 miles apart. So... yeah. Thanks. So not to dodge the question, but I always like to just be really clear, because I think one of the mistakes that happens a lot in transformational work is people say things declaratively that are hypotheses. And, you know, so yeah, I try to be careful about not saying as much declaratively just because I don't know a lot.
Thanks.
Yeah. Yeah, you look like you're going to ask a follow-up question. Was there something that was a follow-up to that?
It was just it was actually, you know, if you've done your tapping with the virus, you know, mm-hmm. you've done that and it's cleared it, you know, it all pulled out, that was great. Mm-hmm. Would you expect that you have now cleared that virus or whatever it was permanently, or would you expect that to be a temporary?
Yeah. So the question is, I don't know. And part of the reason why the question is, I don't know, is because like the very characteristic of a virus is its ability to evolve when its host has become resistant to letting that particular virus in. Like they are as efficient as evolution as anything on this planet. Like in a single generation, we can see a virus transform the way it's going into the body, and the body can't recognize what is going on. So even if we did clear it forever, by the nature of viruses, like its cousin's going to show up, and my system may or may not be equipped to deal with its cousin.
Got you.
Yeah. That
makes sense.
Yeah. Awesome. Cool. Cheers. Thanks, Chris. Other questions, other thoughts, other things that came up as you played around with this stuff or are now noodling around in your head as we think about these things in provocative ways? And our questions about anything tapping related at all, feel free to fire away.
In Chris, or Jane, in one of the sessions, you're kind of talking about how to get to the question, like, mm-hmm. you know, the awareness of discontent is this big, you know, mm-hmm. how do you start slicing it off?
Yeah.
Yeah. Kind of back a little bit more on the slicing off or prioritizing it to have a good launch.
Yeah. So whenever I'm tapping on something, I'm a real practicalist in my approach. And what I mean by that is I'm looking for a practical result. And so I don't care if we're tapping on the biggest thing or the smallest thing. I want to tap on the thing that's in the way of me having what I want to have. And sometimes that's a really tiny thing, and sometimes it's a really big thing. You know, it doesn't matter if the bridge is out 20 miles down the road, if there's a log across the road right now. And the issue of the log is a much smaller issue than the bridge out, but I don't have to worry about the bridge until I get to it. So I always start with, what am I trying to achieve first? Like, what is the action I want to take? What is the feeling I want to have? What is the thing I want to let go of? And then, like, the old, you know, the foundational line of all of my work from Milton Erickson, all transformation starts by stating what is. And so the place that I'm always going to start is, how do I understand this particular moment? And how do I feel about this particular moment? And that is always the thing that I start with first. And sometimes tapping on the emotion about the issue is more powerful than tapping on the issue itself. So I'm experiencing this thing, and how do I feel about it? This is going on right now, and I'm frustrated I'm not getting the outcome I want. I'm disappointed that I'm not taking the actions I want to. It feels as if the world is conspiring against me. It feels as if my system is letting me down. And so I start there. And then the next specific thing that presents itself to me, I go after that. So as I'm entering in, I start with, what is going on? How do I feel? And then if I could be taking the next action, what would be that next action? And how do I feel about that particular action? And just kind of inch my way in that particular way. Because sometimes when I'm tapping, it's just like, I'm really angry about. And it's not until I get through it that I'm able to actually get some clarity to that. It's been few and far between, but there have been times where I have experienced such rage that literally the world turned red. Like there was so much going on in my system, like it looked like this red filter had been going over the top of it. And at that particular point, I don't need a SUDS rating and I don't need to name anything that is going on because I'm so intensely in that emotion and so present to it, I'm tuned into it. So I don't need phrases. You know, like when I have someone who is overcome with grief in front of me and they're crying, I don't go 0 to 10. How big is the grief? Like, because that's like, that isn't necessary for us to see if grief is present or not, because it's clear and obvious. And oftentimes when I'm dealing with someone in that state, I might just do 2 rounds of tapping with them with no words at all. And then we start asking questions and focusing in. And so like the place to start is a place to start. And I know that seems a little flippant, but the nice thing is that like we're constantly getting feedback to what is going on. I was actually having drinks with friends last night who like are now a little bit interested in tapping with me, but are kind of, we're asking questions about classes and how does this sort of thing work? And I was talking about this idea of borrowing benefits. And so you and I could be having a conversation about you feeling like somebody in your life has let you down. And we're talking about the specifics. Maybe it was a business relationship. Maybe someone didn't show up. Maybe someone undermined you. Everybody else in the group might have someone who has let them down, but it's in a personal relationship. But just tuning into being let down, having expectations, not communicating well, even though the specifics aren't the same, the group through borrowing benefits is going to get relief because even though we're not talking about them, we're leaning in that particular direction. And so like part of the answer is it doesn't matter. And the reason why you're asking the question is you want to be more successful and you want to be doing it. You want to be getting relief faster. So you're getting more out of your tapping time. And I have found that if I start, I'm much more likely to get relief than I am to go, what is the best place for me to start and try and figure it out at the beginning? Like I have my last client on Friday, we did a round of tapping and she just went, yeah, none of that landed with me. Like she actively engaged with what we were doing. And she's like, yeah, not like none of those words resonated at all. It's like, awesome. Great. So if that isn't the thing and we've crossed that off, what does it feel like now? And so by simply taking, and like, I'm a huge proponent of the old, it's something that they teach in medical school is when you hear hoof prints, think horses, don't think zebras. Like we always want to think, ooh, it's this rare exotic thing and let's figure it out. You know, sometimes a cigar is just a cigar. And so what I'm always going to do is I'm always going to start with the most obvious entry point. And if we make some progress, what's going to happen? And like, as you know, whenever I work with a client, after we do a round of tapping, the question I always ask first is, what did you notice? And by asking the question, what do you notice? What they're going to do is they're going to report back on this part resonated or this part didn't resonate. And that is just feedback for us to see what the next thing is. And if they notice, yeah, none of that resonated, awesome, discard that. Or, you know, when you said this, it really tuned in. It's like, great. So now what we've done is we've just narrowed the scope of the direction we're going this much. Now let's be a little more specific around that particular thing. The other nice thing is like, you can do, like for me with a client in a session when we're just doing like call and response where I say a phrase and they say a phrase back, we never tap for more than 2 minutes at a time before we're getting feedback. Like when I'm doing parts work and we're doing imagery and that sort of stuff inside of the head, sometimes that's a little more complicated, but I'm constantly getting feedback in that process. But after 2 minutes of tapping, it's like, okay, great. What is the stuff that's showing up? And so it's a really great question. And for me, it's a less important question just because, and part of that comes with just starting for years and years and years with thousands of clients have taught me that just starting is enough, you know? And the other thing that I always do with a client to maintain, like to let them know that I still have a handle on what's going on, even if the first round didn't do anything, is I typically say, okay, now that we've just kind of skimmed across the surface of this particular issue, what did you notice? So what I'm doing is in my vocabulary with the client, I'm letting them know like, it's okay if we didn't get anywhere because we're just on the surface of the issue. And so it's almost like I am setting it up for them to be receptive to us not getting very far in round one of tapping, because sometimes I haven't done a good job of asking questions. They haven't done a good job of reporting on what is going on, or the most common solution or the most common reason just isn't the reason. And so we went in a way that works 85% of the time, and it didn't because we're in that 15%, but I'm framing it to say, we just dipped our toe in the water. How did that particular thing go? Which, like, and I don't like, I just say it really subtly, just like, yeah, we just came across the surface. What'd you notice? You know, first pass, what's there as we glance off this issue. And so I'm not underselling what I'm doing, but I'm always maintaining expectations. And as I'm a more skilled practitioner, I'm learning to maintain my own expectations, because there are times in which I think I am spot on and we're going to go from a 9 to a 2 and a round of tapping, and we go from a 9 to an 8.8, like, and it's barely noticeable. And I'm like, oh, we screwed up. Well, we didn't. You know, we just spent 2 minutes on this thing. It took a lifetime to build it. In 2 minutes, if we only took off 3 or 4% of the thing, okay, that seems like actually a reasonable thing. So does that answer your question, Kathy? I've kind of like danced around it in lots of ways without actually telling you what I do, but kind of thinking dispositionally.
Yeah, it was like, I think in one of the sessions you made comment of sort of the tapping to get to the tapping. Mm-hmm. So that left me thinking that there, you know, was maybe more of a process to hone
in.
It's like, you know, if you don't get off the dock, you aren't going to get anywhere.
That's right. And you just start with a small thing. You know, the other way I like to think about going after something big is, so because of my attention deficit, cleaning is hard. Just because I'm in an apartment, even my tiny little apartment that has 9 things, I'm just distracted by shiny objects all the time. And so when I was a teenager, I trained myself when I was sent to my room to clean up to go pick up the magazines. Socks in the hamper, socks in the hand. And like, I literally just said little mantras to myself, because otherwise over 45 minutes, I'd touch everything in my room and nothing would be cleaned. But it's just giving myself permission to know doing something as small as stacking the magazines is going to make a difference in getting to the place that we're trying to go. And so every round of tapping, I'm just trying to get it a hair better or to have a hair more clarity. And if we get no results at all, that's clarity, because it's telling us we're heading in the wrong direction or we're not specific enough yet. And so having that dispositionally makes it easier for me to feel a little less attached to a particular plan and can be a little more trusting of the process. So basically what I'm saying is I'm just making it up as I go along. Awesome. Chris, I saw you unmuted yourself again. Yeah.
thanks, Gene. I have a friend who has a problem with a facial skin problem. It's like a rash, but, you know, he hasn't been able to clear it.
Yeah.
Using muscle testing, what would be the steps that you would, I mean, she's familiar with tapping.
Yeah.
But I'm a close pal, I tap. What would be the way you'd approach that issue for her?
Yeah. Okay. So the first thing before, like, the first thing I would do when tapping on that is I would start by tapping on the emotions that she has about her particular experience. And just knowing that any frustration, disappointment, angst, whatever comes along with all of that is just going to slow whatever healing process we're doing, whatever information we have. So always start in that particular place. Then what I would do is, like, the types of things that I would be investigating is, as you go, like, onto that last page of the last few pages of the questions I gave you guys last time, but I would start in, like, is this related to an emotion? Is this related to an energy? Is this related to a relationship? Is this that is something that is in the skin? Is it a virus? Is it a bacteria? Is it a fungus? Like, and just kind of going like, okay, like, we have emotional, spiritual, and physiological responses that show up in our body. Like, we have physiological responses to things that are emotional, to things that are physical, to things that are in our body, things that are missing from our body. You know, I'd also be doing things on, like, am I missing something in the body? Not is it something that is in, but is there something I can add to the body? Is there something dietarily I can do? Something I can do with vitamins, something I can do with minerals, and just kind of like, you know, just doing a quick survey of just asking all of the questions. Okay. The other thing that I would, that I, like, if it were me and I was dealing with a client like that, I probably wouldn't spend a huge amount of time muscle testing for all of those things, but mm-hmm. I would like tune into what is going on and tune into my friend and tune in my hope for them. And then just pay attention to my body, to what would be more of a thought-filled therapy approach to that particular mm-hmm. thing. Mm-hmm. You know, so when I have someone who has something that is unknown like this, that's what I'll do, is I'll just go after that particular thing. I'm going to include this on the, I don't know if I showed this on last week or not, or if I showed it Tuesday night. But I actually had a friend of mine create a little web page for me where, as I am muscle testing, I'll actually show it to you guys real quick. I apologize if I'm repeating this, but I'll show you what this is. And like I said, I will make this available to everybody when you get the downloads tomorrow. Thanks. So what we have is it's just a little website here, and you'll see all of the buttons here in the second and third column are buttons. The words over here in the left are actually things that you could type new things in. So it defaults mm-hmm. to all of the basic tapping points we go on. But if there is something that you did, like, you know, because sometimes I'm often tapping up here in my hairline, I could just add that to that particular thing in those blank spaces. So then as I'm thinking of the person as what is going on that's there, I'm like, you know, as I'm intuing into it, it feels like, okay, side of the hand, collarbone, and you get a sense of where these things are, under the nose, eyebrow, outside of the eye, side of the hand, under the, and you'll see how here over here on the right, it's populating what is going on. So then I can copy and paste that to send it to someone. And then the code is also written that if you actually use the print, functionality in your browser, actually let's do that real quick and I'll show you what it does. Print. Oh, dang it. I just sent it to my printer. That's not what I wanted to do. My printer's not plugged in. I want to make a PDF. Hold on a second here. So if we go print, and then I'm going to save as a PDF. Save. Replace. And so then what happens is, let me reshare real quick. And I create a PDF. Come on.
And while it's doing that, Gene, what are you actually? I haven't understood what you're actually doing here. I saw that if you bring up that diagram again, could you just say again what you're actually doing here?
I'm not. You know what I'm doing is I'm tuning into what is going on, and I'm basically asking my system, asking my intuition, what is the point that I tap on next? You know, so it's nothing more than just kind of like going, if I were to guess, what's the next point for me to tap on as I'm tuning into this person and this issue? And for me, I now just kind of get like, it's just like this little lighty up thing in my body. And I just get a physical sensation on that place. And again, I could just be making crap up, but but that's where I started. Like, it was literally just like, I'm just going to let my fingers do the walking when I was just tapping on my own. And I'm like, oh, what would I tap on next? Mm-hmm. And I just kind of tune in. And so I'm just trusting my system in a way.
You had two columns out there. You bring up that web again, it'll be obvious.
Yeah. Okay. Let's see here. Share screen.
Because I'm with what you're saying about that following your kind of nose. So you got point names and a control panel. So here you are. Could you talk us through you're listening to yourself.
Yep. So I'm listening to myself. And so then basically what happens is I get the sensation that I should be tapping on the collarbone next. So over here in the third and fourth column, I just click on collarbone. Yeah. And you'll see what happened here is under tapping order, it populated the word collarbone. And then it feels like the chin is what I tap on next. And so then you'll see the word chin is now populated over here. So then I have two options. I can either copy the text, which just does a command C that I can then paste somewhere. Or what I can do is, go ahead.
What's the difference between the point names? You've got two columns on the point names. You've got two columns on the control panel.
Yeah. So the point names, the white stuff, if you type things in the white stuff, it populates the buttons for you.
Ah.
And okay. The page is created in such a way, I'm going to reload it. The page is created in such a way that it starts out with the default points that we use most often in tapping.
Okay.
You know, so the right-hand side here is basically like the normal ones in the shortcut method plus the finger points. Mm-hmm. And then over here, side of the hand, halo, which is actually a couple inches above, crown, third eye, like just some things. So basically when I was creating this, these are the points that I most commonly used. Mm-hmm. And then if you're in a circumstance where there are a couple, like if there are things that you like to use as well, I could populate this white box with something. And when I hit return, I now have the something button here. So when I click on the something button, it shows up over here. So it's starting out in a default place, but this is giving us the ability to edit it. So instead of it being hard coded, it's starting in a default state. Okay. And then, like I said, so then if you do the regular print functionality, what you then end up with is a PDF with the tapping order in it. And this is basically the width of the note card. So that if we ended up with 30 or 40 points, I could print it out. And if I wanted to make something a little more rugged, I could just tape it to a piece of cardboard or a note card. But this is super easy. Like when I'm, so then like, if I was doing something like this for a client, this is then the thing that I would email to them so that they could work on that particular thing. Like right now I have a couple that I'm working with that their 8-year-old dog has terminal cancer. And so like, just like, again, just tuning into them and what I know about them and the pictures of the dog that they sent me, I went through, well, this is how you might tap on that particular thing as you're struggling with that particular thing, and then send it to them. The other thing that I do with this, then when I create an algorithm like this, I will then muscle test for frequency and duration. And so the question is like, in a single sitting, how many rounds do I do? More than one, more than two? And it's like two. Okay, great. So I'm going to do it twice. How many times a day? More than once? Well, I get a no, so it's once. How many days in a row? And so then it's kind of like, these are the directions to implement this particular recipe. These are the tapping points. This is the order. And I have found with something like this is that for me personally, I don't even have to physically tap on the points, that I can actually read the code and just imagine the tapping on my body. And the I found that useful. Like the time that I found that most useful, I was on the Oregon coast and had got bitten by something and did not realize it until I was getting on a cross-country red eye from Portland to New York. And it felt like lava on the inside of my body as we are in the middle of the air. And so it was painful for me to tap. And so literally I just sat there and I imagined the tapping points, and the pain reduced, and I fell asleep for 30 minutes. Then I'd wake back up in pain and would do the exact same thing again until I got on the ground and was able to get on the phone with my practitioner and do something a little more provocative dealing with that particular thing. But like, so when I'm giving something like this, I just let folks know, like, if you feel comfortable, and some people I won't give that instruction to, because like it can undermine the credibility if I'm saying, tapping's weird and you don't have to do it. You just have to pretend you're doing it. Like for some people, we're now like straining credulity to the point that they're just like, yeah, no, like, you know, like the first family I worked with the substance sensitivity stuff, with their autistic child, like I'd never tapped with the wife. I had tapped with the husband. The husband was on board and the wife was like, Gene, I love you. This is bullshit. You know, like, which is a reasonable response when you have, you know, someone who you only knew as a high school student with ridiculous green hair who just said, I know your son has autism, but if you tap on your body on these things, it's going to help them with their substance. Like, that's a step too far, you know? And so I will calibrate how sophisticated I will present something to someone, not because they can't do it, but I don't want to set someone up for failure just going, yeah, this is unreasonable. So like process wise, that's the way I do it, you know? And so when I tell people, like, when you tap on this, just like hold the intention and go after that thing, you know, like just, you know, and again, like even if the order is wrong, the fact that they're holding the tension for the thing and they're now tapping once a day, two rounds of tapping for six straight days on this thing, only good is going to come from that. So, yeah. So that's kind of dispositionally how I lean into it. And like I said, I'll make the website available for you guys so you can go in and play with it as well. And,
could you also make available, you know, those diagrams you shared with us, the pendulum swinging diagrams, Gene?
Yeah, those are not mine. Basically, what I did is I just went into Google and just typed pendulum diagrams. And if you do that in an image search, you'll find like the basic ones like I showed where it was just the yes, no, ask another question, ask later. And then the other one where it was like, this is for relationships. Like that one for relationships was actually from a book. And that was the image at the beginning of chapter 12. And basically for every single type of issue, they had come up with framing questions and possible options as just kind of like the list of questions I provided for you for the types of things that I muscle test on. Emotions, relationship, past, whatever. They just do it through the exact same thing. Like, okay, it's a relationship issue. What are all the different types of relationship issues? How I show up? Do I believe in love? Are they undermining me? And so that's all that person did. And they just came up with a bunch of those. So if you search on Google, you'll find lots of those. Awesome. Good questions. Yeah, Judith.
So obviously I want to see a picture of the green hair.
I have one that is, I don't know if you'll know this reference, that my friends affectionately referred to as 2000 Flushes Blue. In the 80s here in the States, there was something that you put in the tank of your toilet that disinfected the toilet when it flushed and it turned the water blue. So okay. It was like this light, icy blue color. And so I will share with you all a ridiculous picture of me with spiky blue hair and a really, really, really bad Van Dyke. It is horribly embarrassing, but I will happily share them.
Well, it's like my perm or like mm-hmm. everybody's perm in the 80s. I do actually have a question as well.
And it's not just about the mullet perm that I had in the 80s. Yes, I did. Home perm, mullet with a home perm on the back. Absolutely, I did that.
So I think there's a second picture we want to see.
I don't know if there's documentation of that particular thing. I just know I did it.
So, yes. So, you know, in full honesty, I just watched a video today and yesterday, but I'm majorly intimidated by the whole thing. Mm-hmm. And I don't know where to start. So that's amazing because I'm afraid if I start on myself, which will be the useful thing.
Yeah.
So my fear is that the answer will be something I want.
Right.
Just because I'm influencing it.
Yeah.
But it's not, it wouldn't be actually the thing which will be good for me.
Yep. Absolutely. Okay. So tapping is good for you, even if you're tapping on the wrong thing. So. Okay. So even if you're going through the issue, if you're going through the process imperfectly and you're a really, really super bad eyewitness to your own experience, there is still going to be some benefit to doing that particular thing. Mm-hmm. So even if you're not getting the exact outcome and doing this perfectly, then that's the case. The other thing that I do when I'm starting with something like this is after doing some muscle testing, then when I start tapping on it, I'm like, I am open to the possibility that this is the reason why I am the way that I am. And I'm also open to the possibility that this is not the reason. But my system has given me this piece of information in some imperfect way. And therefore, it is enough for me to start on that particular thing. Therefore, I'm going to tune into this and see what happens. And then pretend as if it is real and tap on it however I would be doing it as if it is real. And then pay attention to what's on the other side after I've done around again. Then again, after doing that, what did you notice? And it's like, oh, this memory or this thing. And actually, it has nothing to do with my seventh grade high school teacher. It actually happened something somewhere else. Like, even though I think I'm going one direction, all of a sudden it shows somewhere else. And so basically what I do is when I doubt, I just say, I have no idea if this is going to work. I'm a really bad eyewitness to my own experience. And I'm going to sit here and tap. And maybe it's useful and maybe it's not, but I'm tapping and that's enough. And so what that does is it takes enough of the edge off that I'm willing to engage with the process. Then naturally in implicit and explicit ways, we gravitate towards the things that are actually benefiting us. Like we just naturally pick up the habits of doing things in a way that is useful. And so and it's one of the reasons why every couple of months I'll go and I'll just listen into an entire week of client calls while I'm doing other things, just my side of those client calls, because I want to hear the things that I'm doing consistently. Because more than likely, if I'm doing something with lots and lots of clients, it's because it's useful. Even if I haven't said, ooh, this is now the new approach I'm going to use, but I've kind of grown into that particular approach. And so then I go back and I really listen to myself. I'm like, oh, I'm using this reframe lots and lots and lots. Maybe I should pay attention to that particular thing. So I'm then I implicitly learned how to do something better because I'm working with clients. I'm now explicitly going, okay, what was that thing? So I can continue to do that over and over again. And so with this, you know, and the other way to do it is you can just go, I'm going to try this crazy thing that Gene made up that might be the dumbest thing in the history of the world. And if this doesn't work, it's all Gene's fault. Like you can start in that particular place. And I would happily take the blame in that particular way. And it's like, this is crazy and Gene's making stuff up, but I know that if I spend a few minutes tapping, at least it's going to be useful. So I might as well try it out. And then I can tell him how wrong he is the next time I talk to him. Like, I play those sorts of games with myself, you know, not that I would then go cuss someone out, but you know, you could tell me what you think. You could tell me what your experience is. Like, you know, that we have that sort of conversation and this sort of stuff all the time. And so like, that's the way I think about it. And that's the way I engage with it when I'm uncertain about anything. You know, it's so funny. Like, I have people who don't believe tapping will work for them, but will tap on the fact that they don't believe tapping will work for them. And then after we've tapped on the fact that tapping won't work for them, they're like, okay, yeah, I guess I will try this particular thing. And like, rationally, that makes absolutely no sense. Subconsciously, it does, because it may be an issue that I believe it or not. Or it may be an issue that I don't trust myself. I don't trust the process. I don't trust I'm going to do it well. I'm going to look foolish when I do that. And so then by tapping on, I don't believe tapping is going to work, and it's okay that I don't believe tapping is going to work, that's something they feel comfortable saying out loud and owning, either owning to me as the practitioner or owning internally, because we don't like to think, well, it works for everybody else, but it doesn't work for me. Like, that's not a fun place to live. And so we tap on, I don't think this tapping thing is going to work. And I think Gene is crazy for doing this. And afterwards, like, okay, let's try that tapping thing. And so just like pre-frame it in all of those ways to give yourself permission to know that it not working is a reasonable outcome. And it's not because you've done it wrong. And if I set up for myself, it's okay if this doesn't work out because it just might not work out. It has nothing to do with my execution. It's so much easier for me to try and do something. You know, like, I'm rock climbing again regularly and I haven't done it for 8 years. And like, I'm in the bottom third of the people inside of my gym when I am there. And I can watch someone doing a really technical climb and I'm on the exact same part of the wall doing a not so technical climb. And it doesn't matter that the person next to me is doing things that I can't do, because in that particular scenario, it's just about me and my own experience. And so I'm able to let go of any of the like, oh my gosh, these really experienced climbers are going to see me struggle on this V1, which is a really elementary thing. Like, I'm over that particular thing. And originally I wasn't. Originally, when I started rock climbing 15 years ago, I went at 10 o'clock in the morning because I had the gym to myself and I didn't have to worry about other people noticing me. And so by getting to a point where you can just frame it in a way as I can try this and fail and it's okay if it doesn't work out, and that's a good investment of time, makes it easier for me to step into it and not know that I'm imperfect. Like, even using this stuff lots and lots and lots, I'm always like, oh, this is a possibility. Let's try that and let's see if it works or it doesn't. And I'm okay if I'm just wrong. Is that useful in helping you to kind of step into it and just kind of trust the process a little bit?
Yeah, definitely. Thank you.
Awesome. Great. Thank you for sharing that and being honest with just being concerned with stepping in, because it's really easy to go, people are asking sophisticated questions. I don't know if I can do it. That's great. Awesome question. Other questions, other thoughts? Lucia.
Yes, I'm just curious. I saw on the chart that you shared with us and the program, I saw something like a gamut 50.
Yeah. So the gamut 50 is actually the gamut point, which is here. Okay. And then the other thing is it said the 9 gamut process. That was an old process where you'd be tapping on the collarbone. And oftentimes when that was taught, one hand was tapping on the collarbone and the other hand was tapping on the gamut point there, or you're tapping on the gamut point and doing it. And the reason why it was called the gamut is because you're going the gamut of all of these things that you were doing at that particular point. Like it spreads the gamut from counting and humming and doing eye movement and that sort of stuff. So if it's gamut 50, it's just this point, the gamut point on the back of the hand. All if it's right. The nine gamut process, it's while tapping there or tapping there and doing the thing that Gary Craig had come up with originally, where, you know, you start by counting and then humming and then counting. So we're going left brain, right brain, and doing the things with our eyes back and forth and up and down and circles and all of that sort of stuff. And so, yeah, so that's all that is. I lived in Baltimore when this was made for me. So this is over 8 years old. That was more in vogue when people were teaching tapping. And that's the reason why both those points appear on there.
Thank you.
Yeah. The only other ones that are a little atypical, I find tapping on the thalamus a useful thing. The thymus. Sometimes the third eye is a place that'll land. And then the halo. And the halo is just like a couple inches above the tippy top of the head. So it's not the tippy top of the head, but it's actually up there. That was something I got from Stephen Daniels and the folks at Quantum Techniques.
I have the friend that introduced me to tapping about four or 5 years ago, started me on the nine gamut because I could go off in a forest, lean against a tree and, knock myself out. But for whatever it's worth, my dog goes absolutely berserk when you do the humming along with the nine gamut. It's like, it's her thing.
Right.
So it kind of got me thinking, can you tap on your animals?
Oh, absolutely.
What would be the points you would tap on animals now that the same precious dog is declining? But how would I tap her?
So there's two ways that we tap for animals. One is we tap surrogately on our own body for them. And that's most of the tapping we do. My sister's last dog had a really hard time getting its nails done at the veterinarian. And I could drop Addison from the other side of the country. Like Lanny was like, we're walking in and you'd literally see Addison being nervous and then would just completely relax. And I was actually out there one time. She used to schedule her vet visits around when I would visit just so I could surrogately tap for the dog. And so they're like doing something and the vet track is trying to hold this nervous dog. And I'm just sitting in the room tapping and no one's paying attention to me. They're all paying attention to the dog. And all of a sudden, Addison just goes completely calm. And the vet tech almost panics for a moment because it feels like for a second that the dog has lost its life. And then she realizes it's okay. And she's kind of like, and my sister's like, it's normal. It's just him, and pointed to me. And so that's the first place that we start. Okay. The second thing that we can do is the tapping points are pretty similar on dogs as they are to humans. It's pretty easy to find because this is something that's more typical here in the United States these days. If you search acupuncture chart for cat, dog, and horses, you will actually find charts where they're showing and you'll see them and like the eyebrow points and the under the eye, like all of those points are very, very similar. The other thing that I like to do when I'm doing that sort of intention is like when I'm detoxing I'm a detoxer. Like I'm a giant lightning rod, not like the way empathic people like take on that emotion. Emotion just passes through me. And I detox empaths just by my presence. So when I'm with a dog, what I will do is as I'm thinking about that, because there's a huge number of points that run the length of the spine. And so I just start like right at their eyebrow and just really intentionally go over the top of the head and just down the back, with a little force and almost just kind of feel like the intention inside of my head when I'm doing that is just going all of the things that are unuseful and are no longer useful in the system. And I almost am just kind of like going, just washing it away out of their system. And I'm imagining I'm doing that with my hand. So like that, those are the ways that I think about it. If you go into the podcast archive, there's two really awesome interviews with a woman named Suzanne Peach. And she actually, her entire life is energy medicine with animals. She does some really, really cool stuff. She's in Boulder, Colorado. But we had two really great conversations and maybe even three conversations with her about different approaches for animals. you know, one general, one when they're scared. I think we did one around 4th of July, just the way that, you know, that's an absolute terror to animals having bombs going off over their head all the time. So, Chris.
Yeah, so with that example, Gene, you know, with one of your sister taking her dog into the vet, yeah. When you, what in your head, you're simply setting an intention for the dog to be relaxed.
Well, in this particular case, I'm guessing, you know, I'm really scared right now because I don't exactly know what is going on. I'm being held in a way that's not normal. What is that buzzing sound? It doesn't feel comfortable when they're grinding down. And I'm just like I'm just pretending the exact same thing when, you know, there's a crying baby on a plane that I'm tapping for. I'm like, okay, why are people nervous on airplanes? Why are kids particularly nervous? Well, this is a new environment. I can't explain what my needs are. I'm packed in. I can't move like I can normally pet, like all of those sorts of things. And so basically I'm just like guessing what would be the reasons why, like what would be the internal dialogue of someone struggling in this particular moment and just kind of going through those particular things and guessing, like, you know, if I couldn't communicate with creatures around me and they were holding me down and bringing medical devices towards me, I'd probably be freaking out as well. Like, and just kind of like imagine that particular scenario if I was in that case. And so I'm just kind of doing that sort of internal dialogue of just like, this is what I'm guessing that they are worried about. And again, it's just, even if I'm wrong, it's, I'm just a little closer and my intention is a little more directed towards this thing in distress. And so that seems to be useful. And that is a way of doing it. I don't know if it's if the things I'm thinking about are the things that are causing the relief, or the things that I'm thinking about are just helping me to stay present to the thing that I'm tapping on. And the vocabulary itself is not the useful thing, but my intention is, like, is it correlation? Is it causation? Like, what is the piece that's going on there? And again, that's just like what I step into, and that's what I'm hoping for.
Thanks.
Yeah. Awesome. Other questions about this or anything else? I'm loving the conversation we're having today. Hi, Lori.
Hi. I'm pretty new to this. I've only been on them for the last couple of months. Have you ever taught how to do parts work with EFT?
I have. What I'll do is I'll send you a couple of links. And if there are some back classes that you want to purchase the back class of that makes sense, that would resonate with you, that, like, it's one of those things that I have a vague sense of what we've done over the last 10 months, but I don't know exactly. And I can't remember what I taught where, but I've taught parts work a couple of different ways. And I'll share with you everything that I've, like, all of the things, and say, hey, these are the different things. And if any of the resources are useful for you, I can give you a chance to purchase those. But yeah, so there's stuff in there. I actually, this time last year, I did a 2-day class called The Art of Delivery that this grew out of. Like, I did a weekend that was an art of delivery, and the last three 90-minute presentations were three different presentations on my, like, it was parts work 101, inner child work, all sorts of wacky visualization. Like, I did basically 4 hours just on parts work. So I'll send you everything that I have that's available, even if it's not currently for sale other places. I'll make it available for you in some way if you want.
Thank you. I'd appreciate that. Thank you.
Yeah. Awesome. Other questions, other thoughts?
Do you always use muscle testing when, with all your client work with your tapping?
Yeah.
How much are you using muscle testing as a kind of a guide for yourself?
Yeah. So in client sessions, I will use muscle testing if it feels like we've hit this thing where it just feels like a giant knot of spaghetti, like. Mm. All of a sudden it's like, okay, like there's a whole bunch of possibilities here. And so instead of like tapping on, like anytime I'm in a circumstance where it feels like there's more than three tines in the fork in the road, when I'm working with a client, then I'm going to just quickly, you know, is it emotional? Is it relationship? Is it something in the body? Some like that sort of thing. For me at this point in my life, most of the muscle testing I'm doing is outside of client sessions when I'm like putting together protocols like this and trying to figure out as I'm trying to advise someone how often to tap on something where I'm like, is it this? Is it that? How many times a day? That sort of stuff. But so in session, it's much more of the two things. One, the question that I'll ask most often muscle testing is, are we heading in a useful direction? And you'll notice I didn't say right direction, you know, but what is the useful direction at this particular point? Or if I'm in a circumstance where it's like, boy, it could be like, you know, like the example I always give, just kind of saying how we are bad eyewitnesses, you know, there is this pain in my hip. I had an accident in the past, could be the past. It's right side of the body, could be a male relationship. It's the right side of my body. Hips are about moving forward. Like, so I now have like all of these possibilities and I'm just trying to narrow down the direction I head first. And so I'll do it in that particular way. So, yeah. So it's not something I probably don't use it daily. I probably use it every other day on a regular client week. So over the course of like a regular week, I might have like 25 sessions, like 12 and a half hours of sessions or so. So on that, I might do that on 3 days, muscle testing might show up. And sometimes I might be in a circumstance where like for 15 minutes with a particular client, because what is going on, because there's, again, so many forks that are opening up in front of us, just trying to be as efficient as possible. And yeah, you know, and then the other ways that I'll do, like the other time that it shows up really, really often is like, if I'm like, just if I'm concerned about, have I re-raveled someone enough to end the session in a safe way? You know, so it's less of a, what should we be tapping on, but what do I need to be doing as a practitioner? And that's actually what we're going to talk about in October, is how to safely get in touch with emotions. And just as importantly, how do we safely repackage all of the things that we've drawn out of the dresser drawers and put them back in there so that we can actually use the living room again. So that is the other thing that it shows up a lot for me. It's just like, okay, like, and the reality is if like if I'm on the fence, I probably am not there yet. Like if I'm asking the question, boy, have we really cleaned this up enough to send them out in the world? If I'm asking the question, it probably means we're not, but I'll get some affirmation doing it that particular way. So that's kind of the application for me.
Brilliant. Thanks.
Awesome. Mitsuko, did you unmute yourself? It looked like you unmuted yourself and then remuted yourself when Chris was talking.
I did unmute myself earlier. I guess my question was, were you comfortable doing muscle testing from the get-go, or did it take a little practice in a little while? And if so.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. For me, I mean, like, again, I just treat it as an experiment. Like, so I didn't have to have confidence in it because I wasn't leaning on it as something that was necessary. Mm-hmm. It was more of just trying it. And the more I tried it, the more I played around with it, I wonder if this is useful. My confidence grew into that. Mm-hmm. And so oftentimes, like when I was starting, I would like muscle test on something and then I would put aside whatever the muscle testing results were and then just approach it as normal and then see, based on the feedback that I got from tapping on myself or tapping on someone else, if I was actually heading in the right direction or not. You know, and again, like I just, you know, the other way that it makes it easier for me to trust it is I'm rarely using it as the definitive way of getting an answer. And since it doesn't have to be a definitive answer, I can trust it much easier. You know, there are a couple of people in my life when I'm working on new things, I will go, hey, this is the idea I'm working on. I'd love your feedback. And I'm not going to do it because of what they say. And I'm not going to not do it because they say I should do it. But I'm going to get feedback from these trusted advisors just because they have a unique perspective on the world. And sometimes I go, oh, yeah, I agree with you is the reason why I shouldn't do this thing. And I'm still going to do this thing because I still think it's worth trying, even in the face of that particular concern that you're raising. Mm-hmm. And so I treat the muscle testing the exact same way. Like, it's like, it's just one more trusted advisor that I can tune into. And then I'm going to do what I'm going to do. And I might follow through and I might experiment. Or I might go, yeah, that's interesting. And then just go about my way. And by doing that, it takes off the pressure of, I got to get this right. And can I trust this particular thing?
Right, right. Well, how long did it take for you to finally feel comfortable and trusting enough of
I'm a giant egomaniacal jerk, and I just trust myself right away. Okay. The way that we talk about it in my family is we talk about the fact that we all have very strong positive self concepts. Mm-hmm. Is the way that we talk about ourselves and the way that we see ourselves, that we are our own biggest fans. And so for me, because the place that I have the most trust in myself is the places that I show up professionally, it was easier for me to trust. And it wasn't as much trusting the process. It was trusting my ability to take feedback from this particular thing. And so like in session with clients, you know, I've been playing around with it probably for 6 or 7 weeks just on my own before I was like really deliberately doing it in session. Mm-hmm. But like just from the very beginning, I was like, oh, let's try this and let's just see what happens. And yeah. So yeah, I might be a bad judge of that particular thing about how quickly you add something to it. Because I am in a circumstance that there's very little personal hang up for things not going well professionally for me. And I would describe that. So yeah, so that would be my guidance and my thought about that particular thing.
Yeah. Thank you so much for sharing that.
You bet. Awesome. Great. Anything else I can do for you or any other questions? Okay, a couple of logistical things. I will have the recording from Tuesday night and today up so you guys can go back. It was a different wide-ranging conversation than this one, which you might find useful as well, just hearing other people's questions. The other thing, I don't know if you saw it or not, tomorrow morning at 6 a.m., I am starting another class for the week on upper limits. Where I'm going to be getting on Zoom at 6 a.m. Eastern time all week and just tapping along around upper limit issues. You'll also get a chance to see me develop a tool in real time. Like this is something that I'm tapping for myself in a new way. And so I've created a tool. And so over the course of the week, you'll see it evolve as we learn from each other. It's not something you have to sign up for live. You'll get the recordings and all of that sort of good stuff. So that was in the emails this week. And then, yeah. I think that's about it. Next month, we're going to talk about opening and packing up emotions in a good, useful way. That'll be our October topic. You'll get emails about that coming very, very soon. There's lots of other really fun things coming to the website in the next 3 months. I have 4 things planned that are coming your way that many of them are free, and I hope you enjoy with us. Awesome. Thanks for hanging out on your Sunday afternoon, evening with me. Do I have a link to the upper limit thing? I do. Let me paste that in the chat box for you real quick. I'll just send you all the details. Hold on. Upper limit busters. Boom. So there in the chat box is a link to the thing that I'm doing all next week. The background basically is I am currently in a coaching program in which people have $100,000 sales days and $1 million sales weeks. And as engaging with my business and where it is growing, I have found a place where I am comfortable too. And one penny over that freaks me out. And I want to get over that particular number. So it's going to be an opportunity to just grow into those sorts of things. Awesome. Well, without further ado, enjoy the rest of your weekend, be it Sunday evening or Sunday morning or Sunday afternoon, wherever you are. As always, Gene, G-E-N-E at Tapping Q&A. I can always be found there. Let me know. I can be helpful. Have an awesome day and I'll talk to you guys real soon. Bye-bye.